What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped inside my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's all about my favorite, most exciting news that I saw at Gamescom this past week. So let's talk about it and dive right into the episode with my news catch of the week. Gamers, with no more official Electronic Entertainment Expo, better known as E3 anymore, honestly, we've gotten kind of used to having the major publishers such as Microsoft and Sony and Ubisoft holding their own events throughout the course of the year. But it also is still nice to have some kind of massive trade show that everybody kind of physically can go to and get together. And we still see all these really cool announcements for the most part over the course of a multi-day period. So Gamescom is set in Germany and they were back in full force this year. And man, I got to tell you, I was absolutely ecstatic about quite a few of these announcements that we saw coming through. And the first one that I got to jump right into is the sequel to one of my favorite surprise games of 2021. And that is Tormented Souls 2 being the new game that's a surprise. So Tormented Souls, survival horror game, absolutely amazing. If you love survival horror, if you love classic survival horror, like the old school, the fixed camera position, Resident Evil games, Silent Hill, those PlayStation 1 era games, but you want to play that style of survival horror, but with updated modern tech, oh man, do not hesitate right now. As soon as you're done listening to this episode, go download Tormented Souls. It is, in my opinion, the best emulator of that style of survival horror that I have played. And not just the best in general, but best looking, best playing. I mean, it's just all around the best. I love Daymare 1998, and it was very close to what those original PlayStation 1 experiences were, but the quality level just wasn't there across the board. Man, Tormented Souls had it, and I am absolutely caught off guard, to be honest, by this announcement of a sequel to it coming out sometime next year in 2024, but it doesn't matter because it looked amazing. The trailer they showed, it was a cinematic trailer, but reading the description of what the developer says that we're going to expect from the story and just knowing what that first game was has me so excited for this game. So if you didn't play the first game, essentially there is a main character you play as who returns as the protagonist in this game. And essentially she was sent to a location to find her sister. Well, let's just say that things may be going wrong with her sister at this point in time, post the first game. And at the beginning of the second game, it seems like the only solution to help her sister is to go through some supernatural means to give her the help that she needs. So it leads her to these really creepy areas like monasteries and other abandoned hospitals and things like that. And I love those types of settings. I mean, the absolute, what I would consider almost perfect settings for survival horror games. I love exploring those areas in the dark, creepy noises, creepy creatures, reading notes and stuff of the past chaos and terror that went on in the area I'm exploring currently. Oh man, I can't wait. And the same kind of gameplay that you could expect if you played the first game is back. I mean, you have the tight corridors, the really well done environments, the really interesting backstory and puzzle solving, all those great things are said to be coming back in the sequel. And gamers, I just absolutely cannot wait to play this game. Oh man, I can't wait. I can't say it enough. So Tormented Souls 2, wanted to kick off the segment with that game because it is just so exciting for me that that is actually a reality that's coming. Now, the next game that I wanted to talk about that really surprised me, but you know, more and more the game surprises me, the interest level that I have gained on it, and that is Assassin's Creed Jade, the mobile-only Assassin's Creed game that is currently in beta and is about to go into beta phase 2. But we did get a new gameplay trailer and kind of like some backstory with some monologue of what the main character is doing. And just in general, seeing some really cool shots of combat and exploration and climbing on the Great Wall of China, because this game is set in ancient China. So I thought it looked really good. I mean, graphically, first off, for it being a mobile-only game, I mean, I know games nowadays are very much further beyond what they were capable of years ago. But still, for it to be a mobile game that you play on your cell phone, I think it graphically looks great. And from what we were shown, it looks really smooth. Like, it runs smoothly, plays smoothly, and what you would expect from a normal Assassin's Creed title on console or PC, I mean, it looks like it runs just as good. Now, I will say there is a level of detail that's not there that I would say is in Mirage, because we saw a new gameplay trailer for Mirage and different things like that over the last 2 weeks, really. There was a new story trailer for Mirage, as well as a new trailer that we saw at Gamescom that highlighted everything fully spoken and monologued in Arabic, which I thought was actually kind of cool given the setting. But Assassin's Creed Jade just really stood out to me as like, man, I really am very interested in this game. When it was first announced, I was very biased because I wanted the next main console game to be set in ancient China. Ends up that it's ancient Japan. But either way, we still get ancient China, so I'm very much open to trying this out. And the more I see of it, the more I like it. And continuing speaking about Assassin's Creed Mirage, the latest trailer we saw at Gamescom, again, it was all spoken in Arabic, and it was from Bassem, the main character of the game's perspective, and he was just talking about how he grew up in the streets, and they were just showing different clips and snapshots of different areas of the city of Baghdad, and just kind of, you know, listening to Bassem's monologue talk about the past and his friends and all these different experiences that he's had, and just, again, getting a really good look at all the differentiation that that city of Baghdad has to offer based on what Ubisoft has created for us to get lost in. I've absolutely loved what I've seen so far, and that is another one. I mean, just every single trailer, I am just getting ramped up that much more as far as my hype level to get my hands on Mirage, which, thankfully, if you didn't know, has recently been announced as coming a week early. So it was supposed to come out October 12th. We're now getting it October 5th. So quite the opposite of what we're used to in the gaming community. We're used to hearing about games being delayed, not pushed forward. So that was actually really awesome, and I'm actually really excited about that. I cannot wait to get my hands on Assassin's Creed Mirage. Next, I'm going to transition gears quite a bit here and go to the next game, which is RoboCop Rogue City. So I've been looking at this game ever since it was first announced that it was coming out, and I am old enough to have grown up being a massive fan of RoboCop as a kid. So obviously the first one, the first movie, is the best. After that, they kind of, you know, get pretty shaky. But overall, I've just always loved the character of RoboCop, the memories of playing with the action figures, and just in general, he's a cool character. So given the fact that there was this new game coming out, and we haven't had a RoboCop starring or a game with RoboCop in it for quite some time at this point. So to have a RoboCop game on current gen tech was just exciting for me. And to have it set in the universe of the movie and just have the original actor reprise his role and everything, I mean, I just thought that was awesome. So it's been well over a year now that we've been seeing little updates here or there about the game. And it was recently announced as being delayed. We were supposed to get it in September next month, but it has since been delayed until November. So we'll see if that gets pushed back any further. To be honest with you, I'm kind of okay that it gets pushed out of September, because I don't know if it would have been enough. Even though I love me some RoboCop, I just don't know if it would have been enough to pull me away from Starfield or even Mortal Kombat 1. So I understand why the developers maybe wanted to push it back a couple months after Spider-Man 2 in October. But RoboCop Rogue City, it takes place in New Detroit, and there's just a lot of really cool looking stuff that this game looks to have on offer. It's from a first person perspective. Obviously, you're going through the game as if you're seeing it through RoboCop's eyes. And there's all these kinds of different things that you can do in the game. There are side quests. There's NPCs you can talk to. You can actually walk to the police station and interact with people and pick up cases. And there's choices that you can make throughout the course of the game that affect the story and just different things and how different characters react to you. It's that kind of a game. It's got all those elements to it. And it's graphically looks really good. And fundamentally, watching it in action, I'm very happy, because I was worried when I saw the screenshots initially, where you see all those lines and boxes, where it's kind of like the lock-on or targeting reticule for RoboCop himself. I was worried about how that would actually be implemented in look or feel as you're actually playing the game, but it didn't look bad at all. And the gunplay looked fast, the gunplay looked good, and I just want to get my hands on a controller to see how it feels. But I'm really excited for RoboCop. I really hope that it actually is a pretty solid experience. I'm not expecting, you know, AAA 10 out of 10 game here. It's not a discredit to the game or the developer. It's just I know not to be naive in some situations. And this one, as long as we're getting like a 7 or a really good 8, I'll be very happy with that. But the next game, man, I got to tell you, gamers, the next game on this list I got to bring up is Alan Wake 2. So we got a new trailer titled The Dark Place. And with that trailer, it really highlighted Alan Wake himself. And I was very excited about that because the trailers we've seen so far, as good as they've been, I feel like they've really kind of prioritized, at least visually, the FBI agent that you're going to play as in the game. Because if you didn't know, you get to play as two characters throughout the course of this game, alternating between the two of them, the FBI agent, as well as Alan Wake. Now, the FBI agent, at least at the beginning of the game, it seems, is going to be starting out in the real world, or our world, where we exist. And Alan Wake is starting out in the dark place, which is what this trailer really highlighted. And man, gamers, I can't tell you how excited I am just from the visuals of seeing what the dark place looks like and how he's exploring it. Kind of think of it as the upside down version of the real world. Like that's really kind of what it is. It's this alternate version of our world. And Alan Wake is stuck there. He's stuck in a horror story and he's trying to find his way out. And it just looks absolutely terrifying, to be honest with you. And don't get me wrong, I know that Sam Lake, the lead writer and one of the big creatives on the game, as well as his likeness, he's actually in the game. In this trailer, you see him as one of the detectives, and he was also the likeness of Max Payne in those original games back in the day, because Remedy did the first two. And so that's actually kind of a cool little Easter egg, if you know that. But Sam Lake had already said years ago when they first announced the game at the Game Awards, they were leaning heavy into the survival horror aspect of this entry. And don't get me wrong, there were scary moments in Alan Wake 1, truly terrifying moments at some points. But I got to tell you, this game looks on a whole different level. I mean, if a trailer makes me jump a little bit or be a little like, whoa, then that tells you that they're doing a good job of hitting that mark and going after hitting that target that they want. And I just get so excited thinking about what that game is going to offer. Because as an Alan Wake fan, since the original game, and just American Nightmare was a smaller side kind of game, if you will, that released on back in the day, what was known as Xbox Live Arcade, right? And you gamers have been around for a while, you know what I'm talking about. But Alan Wake's American Nightmare was a little bit different than the base Alan Wake game, but it was still Alan Wake content. So to get this full-on, full-fledged game is very exciting for me as a fan of these characters and of this type of story and world. So I really can't wait to see what Remedy does with it. And the writing of Sam Lake has just always really been amazing to me. Don't get me wrong, sometimes I get a little sidetracked or confused about what exactly which way is up. But I mean, man, I tell you, his track record between the Max Payne games and then you go into Control and Quantum Break and Alan Wake, of course. I mean, he's just, I can't wait to see what he has in store for this game, which now releases on October 27th, 10 days after what the initial launch date was supposed to be. And again, Sam Lake at Gamescom flat out said I did not want to get lost in the shuffle, basically, with Spider-Man 2. I don't want to go up against Spider-Man 2. So we moved it 10 days so everybody can have, you know, a week to play Spider-Man or a little bit of separation there. Hopefully we don't cannibalize each other. And I hope not. Next up is an RPG that I haven't seen anything on in a very long time, probably well over a year at this point, and that is Crimson Desert. So this is a third-person action RPG that just looks absolutely phenomenal. Graphically, from a world design standpoint, combat, I mean, it just looks awesome. So I can't really wait to get my hands on that, but it's not coming out anytime soon. The developers actually said at Gamescom the game is now not looking ready until a late 2024 release. So we still have probably another year plus before we get this game. So it's okay. Look, as long as you put out a quality product, I'm quite all right with it. It's very much, it looks Game of Thrones from a design standpoint, as far as that realistic fantasy vibe I get from it. Game of Thrones or The Witcher, you know, something along those lines is what the world and the enemy types and just the visceral combat, the way that everything looks. That's the style that it looks like they're going for with Crimson Desert, that more adult theming. And I'm all about that. I just can't wait to see more details of what the story is and what exactly the purpose of what's going on here is. So I can't wait to see more on Crimson Desert. Now, speaking of another massive open world RPG, We have Where Winds Meet, which, believe it or not, even though I don't remember ever hearing of this game before Gamescom last week, it actually is still slated to be coming out late this year. So sometime in the next 4 months, I guess, they're supposed to be releasing this game. But it looks really cool. I mean, it definitely has a unique style to it. It looks like it's an ancient China setting. And it has very much those themes and the mythology and the lore of different mysticisms and things like that going on in that culture back in that time, back in ancient China. So it looks really, really cool. It has some really cool combat that I can't wait to kind of dive into and see a little bit more of. So I definitely am excited about that. Next up, we have Stalker 2. Now, Stalker 2 is supposed to be an Xbox console exclusive, and I've been looking forward to this game since it was first announced as coming to Xbox. I've never played the original Stalker, so I don't know much about the series, other than the fact that the surname for this game is Heart of Chernobyl, and I know that it takes place in and around that area of Chernobyl, the irradiated area where the nuclear power plant exploded, you know, back in the 80s, and it just looks like, obviously, all these monsters and creatures have been created because of the radiation over time, and you're out there in it, and you know, there's also other human beings that are out there, and I don't know what the details behind all that is, but basically it's a very different kind of a shooter than what you would say Call of Duty is. So Call of Duty is very much like action first and narrative and item and inventory management and all that kind of stuff. That is either non-existent or completely secondary to just pushing forward, which is what Call of Duty is all about, in linear maps. Whereas Stalker 2 is a much bigger scale, and it also has a very strict inventory management system, which I'm not really too intimidated by that. I know I had read or seen some people kind of like, oh man, you know, if you're not about tight inventory management. Well, my thing is I absolutely love survival horror, and that genre is just synonymous with item management. Like, that's part of what survival horror is. And this game is kind of like an action horror game. So item management, inventory management doesn't really bother me. I think it was really more of a disclaimer saying that and putting that out there for Call of Duty fans who may be thinking this is Call of Duty with like irradiated creatures and monsters. And that's just not the case. It's not what this game is about. So I really can't wait to get into this game's world as well and see what it's all about. See what the hype around the series was, and exploring the irradiated lands of Chernobyl and just walking around. I mean, the environments look creepy, and I don't know. There's these creatures that kind of, just the speed at which they move and they can turn invisible. And there's just some really good looking stuff here. Mutant dogs. It just looks like a very full kind of a game experience. And I can't wait to check that out and see more of that. But that, unfortunately, is not looking like it's coming out this year, which was the rumor. There was a rumor that it was still on track to release this year. But it's looking like it's going to be more quarter one of 2024, maybe around March of next year. So I'm okay with that because, again, this final 3 months of the year is just packed for me. So including this next game and final game that I'll talk about in this segment, which is Banishers: Ghosts of New Eden. Now, Banishers comes out November 7th of this year as of the time of this recording. And Banishers just looks really unique and really, really cool, in my opinion. If you don't know anything about it, it was first debuted, I would say, within the last year. And it's by Don't Nod as the developer. They actually developed the Life is Strange series. They did Vampyr, which I loved. I also enjoyed Life is Strange, but man, Vampyr, I loved that setting and those dynamic of character and NPC, and just, it was just really, really good. So Banishers, when you look at it, it actually takes place in the late 1600s, and you play as Red, and his wife has recently passed due to certain circumstances, which we're not really made privy to at this point. Probably won't find that out specifically until we play the game, which I'm fine with that. The bottom line is, though, she's still sticking around as a ghost, and she is essentially attached to him or tethered to him in such a way that there's these, he's basically, they were ghost hunters, creatures and things like that. Think about the way they were, it was kind of likened to in the trailer and at Gamescom I'd seen and heard, that think of it as The Witcher, but instead of going after monsters, they go after ghosts and just different other supernatural creatures. So it sounds really cool. And Red's wife is still helping him even after she has died. And in spirit form, that's one of the unique things about it that I think is really cool. The combat just looks very unique because you can kind of flash back and forth between using Red as well as using abilities that are unique to his wife. So that aspect of it is really cool. But the other thing is, the whole purpose of this game and the drive of it is to basically take out as many creatures and do specific tasks that somehow link together to allow his wife to come back to life. And I'm not exactly sure, or didn't pick up on what it is that by doing these things allows her to come back to life, but I did get the vibe that doing these different tasks, you're going to be asked and left with a choice of, say, for instance, in the trailer, there is these two sisters at a village that you go to, and you have a choice to either sacrifice the one, which will help towards your goal of resurrecting your wife, or you don't sacrifice her and you support the two sisters in the village and you just go on to the next quest, if you will, or the next town to try to find another way of increasing the odds of your wife being resurrected. So that's, I don't know, you know, once I get into the game and I'm sitting there and I'm getting to know the townsfolk and these two sisters, for instance, specifically, and am I going to be conflicted enough to where I get to that choice and it's like, oh man, like, am I going to sacrifice this person for my wife? I know that my wife in real life, my actual wife, if I was in that scenario where, hey, my whole purpose is to have her and get her back, man, that would be a really, really tough call. So to try to put myself in Red's position, oof, that's going to be kind of fun, but not, if that makes sense. But either way, it's supposed to come out November 7th of this year. Got to really find a way to play this game because I just think it looks fantastic and very unique and something different. And again, I just really love Don't Nod. I think they have a great track record and have enjoyed for the most part what they've put out in the past. So that was my thoughts on my favorite game announcements or new trailers or updates that we got from Gamescom this past week. Now let's open up my captain's log and see what games that I've actually been playing over the last few weeks, because it's been a week since I've been able to update you and there's quite a bit to go over, gamers. Gamers, it's been a couple of weeks since I was last able to update you on the many adventures that I've been having in the world of gaming. And I want to start off by just kind of doing a couple of quick hits in this segment because there's a lot of really minor play sessions I had with multiple games. And the first game I want to talk about, it wasn't a minor play session by any means, but I do want to share with you the fact that I was able to successfully complete Final Fantasy 16. Now, I did not get the Platinum Trophy and didn't get all the trophies therefore in the game, but I did go after every trophy except for completing the game on Final Fantasy mode, which is essentially you got to play through it on New Game Plus, as well as the trophy for maxing out all abilities, which in order to get the required amount of ability points, in order to do that, you're going to either have to grind for hours and hours and hours on your regular playthrough or play through it on New Game Plus. My wife, just to put it into perspective, just completed the game a second time on New Game Plus, Final Fantasy mode, and she had about 10,000 ability points to spare, she said. So basically, you can play through it without doing any side quests, is what the message was I got from her. So just the FYI on that, a free little buried treasure gaming tip for you there. But Final Fantasy 16, completed it. You've been following me along all these months. If you have, you'll know all the different amazing moments I had in it. If you want my definitive final thoughts on the game as well as my review score, I do have the review out there, so go check that out. And I'd love to hear your feedback on what you thought on the review as well as the game itself. If you shared my opinions, if you disagree with me, I'd just love to hear from you. Now, in addition to beating Final Fantasy 16, I did have something else that I completed over the past 2 weeks, and that was the Burning Shores expansion for Horizon Forbidden West. Now, again, if you've been following me, you'll know that I did touch on the expansion way back in April, maybe early May, when I first was playing it, when it first came out, and I was loving it, and I still stand by the fact that I loved it. I had gotten probably, I would say, 3/4 of the way through the expansion up until most recently this past week when I finished Final Fantasy 16 and jumped back into it. That was my ultimate goal, is to complete Final Fantasy 16 and this expansion for Burning Shores by Starfield's release. So I was very excited that I was able to actually do that. And Burning Shore specifically, let me just say that if you are questionable on it, it is absolutely worth every penny that they're asking for it. It's got an amazing story, as you would expect from the Horizon series. There's a brand new character in Sika that Aloy meets, and she's an awesome character. A great compliment to Aloy, in my opinion. And just in general, the added lore and this entire new area to explore of the Burning Shores, which is essentially LA, the city of Los Angeles and the surrounding area. Oh man, it's just so amazing. And multiple just really high points for me throughout the course of the expansion. I mean, the biggest thing for me was probably Pangaea Park. And think of it, basically, this is Guerrilla Games, the developer of Horizon. In my opinion, this is their love letter to Jurassic Park, because it is just that. It is a theme park that is built around this movie franchise that was all about portal hopping and time traveling with this one main protagonist. And she was all over the park as well. And it was all about dinosaurs. And it was just actually really, really amazing to explore that park. And I don't know. It was just awesome. So I don't want to say too much to potentially spoil anything, but let me just say that was my favorite part of the expansion, outside of maybe the climax. Because let me just tell you, Guerrilla knows how to do some climax. I gotta stress that. Man, it was just an awesome ending to this expansion. It was absolutely epic. And the final boss fight and the surrounding fights of that boss fight, let me just say, they were arguably the greatest fights that I have had in the Horizon series. Now, that's through Zero Dawn's entirety, Forbidden West's entirety, and Burning Shores. Unfortunately, I own the Frozen Wilds, the expansion to Zero Dawn, the first game on PS4, but I never played it. So one of these days, maybe I'll actually boot it up and finally play it, because, man, more Horizon content, to me at least, is always welcome content. So I'm not going to do an actual separate review for Burning Shores, because I feel like for the most part, the bulk of what I would say in a review is what I've already kind of touched on in my Captain's Quarters episodes. And just in general, I can tell you right now, if you're questionable on purchasing it, but you're a Horizon fan, don't even question it. Absolutely purchase Burning Shores. It's definitely worth your time. I probably spent about 26 hours, roughly, is what it looks like, playing through, doing every side quest, getting every collectible, defogging the entire map. And I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed my entire time with it. So roughly 26 hours, there's 18 trophies that come with this expansion, and I got all of them in that time. So I would say if you're less of worried about defogging the whole map like I was, you're probably closer to 20 hours that you can spend in this, which again is still a very commendable amount. So Burning Shores, absolutely amazing. But I got to tell you, gamers, I always look at when I complete a game, any game, but especially a massive epic game on the scale of something like Final Fantasy 16, I look for sometimes what I call a palate cleanser, or multiple palate cleansers, as was the case these past 2 weeks since completing Final Fantasy 16. And the first one here that I want to talk about is Mega Man 11. So as almost embarrassed as I am to say this, as a lifelong gamer, I've actually never sat there and truly played a Mega Man game. All the way back to NES up until now, I had never actually played a Mega Man game. So I am a massive fan of G Fuel, the energy formula drink. If I don't know if you gamers out there, if your listeners are a fan of that line of drink products or not, but I am a massive fan. And a lot of their flavors are themed after games and game characters and whatnot. So they have two now Mega Man flavors. And the first one was Blue Bomber Slushy. It sounded awesome. Vanilla Blue Raspberry. And I wanted to try it, but there was something in me that said, you know what? I feel kind of like a biter if I'm going to buy this. Like, why am I going to buy this? Yeah, I want to try the flavor, but it's a Mega Man themed flavor. So I feel like you don't even know anything about Mega Man. You never played Mega Man. You know what? I've always wanted to. I'm going to do this. So I looked up on the PlayStation to see what was accessible. Sure, I could have played Mega Man 9 or 10 via streaming, because they were PS3 releases. I could have played those on the PS5 if I wanted to through my PS Plus premium subscription. But I opted to actually buy the most recent game, which was out on PS4, Mega Man 11, and that did come out about 4 or 5 years ago. But let me tell you, I absolutely loved my time with the game. I played roughly an hour of the game, and I played through the first three stages of it. And visually, it was great. It was exactly what I was looking for, just a classic side-scroller, just classic boss fights. I mean, just that is what I wanted at that time, for whatever reason. Not just the fact of the G Fuel and all that, but after walking away from Final Fantasy, completing it, that's the kind of style I was looking for. So it definitely checked off the boxes that I was looking for in that moment, and it was a lot of fun. Now, I got to admit, since I'd never played a Mega Man game before, I did opt to play under the newbie difficulty. So I actually want to go back, now that I've tried it out, and play it on normal, because one, I feel more confident than I did going into it, having played it now. Two, you don't get a trophy for completing the game on newbie. You only get it for normal and above. So I'm like, man, I don't want to get all the way to the end of the game and complete it and not get a trophy. Because, I mean, maybe you guys out there don't really care as much as I do about trophies or achievements, but I still feel like, man, if I beat a game and don't get a trophy or achievement for completing the game, I don't know, man, I feel like I'm missing something. So for me, I'm definitely going to go back to it, and I want to restart over from the beginning of the game on normal difficulty. And it just was really unique. I mean, again, I haven't played the other Mega Man games, but from what I understand, the uniqueness of this game is you could actually customize and upgrade certain attributes of Mega Man and certain different armors and abilities. And then when you're in the game, they have an ability to slow down time as well as increase or double your power on your energy shot. So using that in conjunction with the enemies in the levels as well as the boss fights was just insanely fun. And it was only 10 bucks. It was on sale for 10 bucks. So I figured, you know what? I can't lose with this. If I don't like it, it is what it is. It was 10 bucks. But if I like it, hey man, that was 10 bucks well spent. So definitely thoroughly enjoyed Mega Man 11. So if you never tried it, if you're like me, I say give it a shot. Not necessarily if you don't want to buy 11, but if you have PS Plus Premium and you can stream games via the cloud, then check out 9 or 10. But either way, Mega Man seems like a fun series, so I'm glad I tried it out. Speaking of trying things out, this next game, Fort Solace. So Fort Solace just released this past week, and it released with a trial on the PlayStation 5. And I was very excited to play this game. Troy Baker, one of my favorite voice actors and character animators within the gaming industry, he was very much a main character in this game. And so he was kind of a draw for me to keep an eye on this. Plus, you had the added that it is a survival horror game set on Mars. So sure, we've seen that before, but something about it just was calling to me. So seeing that there was a free trial of it, I was absolutely all about giving it a shot. It was only an hour, though, but I was like, you know what? The other night when I decided to go ahead and try it after I'd installed it and all that, I said, you know, I should be able to stay awake for an hour because it's probably around 8 o'clock, gamers. And look, in my life and my job, it requires me to get up at 4 o'clock every morning. So I usually get tired earlier than you would normally think, right? 8 o'clock at night, you're like, oh, that's not too bad. Well, for somebody who's been up at that point since 4 in the morning, it actually is pretty rough. So I still tried to stay awake. Believe it or not, though, gamers, within 15 minutes is all about I remember of the game. I was out. And then I woke up a couple of hours later on the couch, open my eyes, and see your trial period has ended. So I was very frustrated with that. I will say that in that 15 minutes, all I was able to do was basically calibrate my screen, select the new game, hear a dialogue exchange between two characters at the beginning, kind of learn the controls of walking around between the character movement, camera control, and I had to go to an RV that was going to take me to the actual Fort Solace, and that's where I passed out. So I really can't tell you guys much about it, but I wanted to put it out there. Just thought it was kind of a funny story that, man, you got 1 hour to try this out, and you can't even stay awake past 15 minutes. Wow. Well, there is another game that I tried out that I had purchased on sale here recently, and that was Midnight Suns. Now, Midnight Suns was on sale on PlayStation Plus as part of their summer sale, and I ended up paying 28 bucks for it, and I thought it was actually a great price. The base game is normally 70 bucks, and then you have all these other additions that were incrementally more and more expensive, but I've always wanted to play this game. It came out last year in December, and I already had a lot of other stuff going on gaming-wise, and I just knew that with an RPG like that, I wasn't going to have the time or, you know, the ability to focus and put that TLC into it that it would have deserved and would have needed. So being that it was on sale as cheap as it has ever been, and my interest level for it was higher than normal, based on a conversation that I had with a good friend of the show, Graveyard Gamer of the Graveyard Gamer podcast, right here on Podcasters and Spotify, many other platforms. Check him out. If you like me, you'll like his show as well. I promise you that you will. So him and I were talking about it, and just in general, it drove that hype level up for me. So I said, you know what? I'm getting this. So I did end up purchasing it, and I decided to try it out the other night because I was reading the current line of ongoing comic series and the Ghost Rider line of character. So there's multiple series right now. There's a crossover event with Wolverine. There's a regular Ghost Rider ongoing. Plus, Danny Ketch Ghost Rider has his own limited series right now as well. So lots of Ghost Rider in my life. So I was pretty amped to get into Midnight Suns in that moment because Ghost Rider is in the game. Granted, it's not Danny Ketch or Johnny Blaze, but it's still the character of Ghost Rider. It's Wolverine. I just wanted to really get into that world, if you will, the Marvel Universe. So I jumped in and I played it for about 50 minutes before I passed out again. But in that 50 minutes, I can tell you, if you were wondering about the card-based combat system or anything like that, that was really the biggest potential hurdle that I thought I was going to have to make. And same with Graveyard Gamer when it came to this game. And let me just say, I'm here to tell you, it's actually really, really cool. Each card, you have three cards you can use for each turn. And each card has a certain value, a numerical value, as well as it's representative of a certain move that you can do, whether it's a basic move or whether it's a heroic move. Now, there is a heroic meter that fills up as you land successful hits on the side. And the more you fill that up, the higher required quantity of heroic move cards you can use. So you just kind of got to use that in conjunction with the placement of your character or which character you're controlling, as well as the enemies, because you're not just attacking and waiting for them to attack. You can also move around the field and aim different attacks where, say, they'll hit an enemy into another enemy or an enemy into an environmental hazard like a rock, or you can pick up rocks and get a free turn at the end of certain combat battlegrounds, and you can throw the rock at them and do damage, and that's like basically a free turn. So I thought that was actually really cool. The animations of all this is done really well. Graphically, it's kind of like a cross between a realistic looking game and a cel shaded slash animated kind of looking game, or a painted hand drawn. I don't know how to explain it, but it's got a really nice medium between those styles. And it looks really cool. It looks fitting for the characters. And I guess it makes sense because they're based on comic books. But either way, I was very happy with what I played with the combat. I was also kind of taken aback at first because I forgot that you actually create your main character in this game as the protagonist, whether it's male or female, and then you kind of choose the look of them. And then at that point, it pretty much drops you into the hub base of the whole game. And at that point, it's this massive grounds in Salem, Massachusetts, that you can kind of explore, and kind of reminded me of the Xavier School for Mutants, or for Gifted Children, excuse me. But bottom line is, I was exploring that when I passed out. But it was during that exploration that, for me, the character movement and the character movement seemed kind of floaty, and the camera movement along with it was kind of loosey-goosey, is the best way I know how to describe it. So neither was bad, but it was kind of jarring when I first was controlling my character. I feel like it's one of those things I'd probably get used to it the more I played the game, of which I would love to continue doing, because, man, it just 50 minutes was not enough to really get into the meat and potatoes of a game like that, especially when I'm interacting with characters like Blade and, again, Ghost Rider, Captain Marvel, Iron Man, Doctor Strange. I mean, if you're a Marvel fan, it's definitely a really cool game to try and check out. Now, I also dabbled some more in Far Cry 6 this past couple of weeks because it's been on my mind as well. And in Far Cry 6, I mean, man, the islands of that area of Yara and just the beauty of it. The graphics are really what jump out at me every time I think of that game. But what I also love about it is the lore of the islands that are there and those that were there before you. I didn't really do a whole lot in the game because I only played maybe a couple hours. And in that time, most of it was spent just kind of exploring and using my grappling hook to scale mountainsides and find my access point to this cave that was supposed to have some kind of treasure. And it was actually really cool because when I finally got to the cave, it was this kind of very low depth stream of water that led to the cave mouth, the opening of the cave. And when you go in there, there's all these kind of ritualistic setups. There's a bunch of documents you can read and ultimately a treasure map that shows you three different locations throughout the world that has potential treasure to it. So that was actually pretty cool. But I gotta tell you, my favorite thing so far about Far Cry 6 is riding a horse. That horseback riding is done so cool and done so well by Ubisoft. I just thought it was awesome. And it's always really cool from that first-person perspective. And then just how well the horse controls, I was just kind of blown away by it. So not really a whole lot that I did in Far Cry 6, but it was still a fun 2 hours that I was able to put into it. And speaking of a fun 2 hours, How about a fun 2.5 hours? Because that's what I put into Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. So I finally started this game. A lot of the main reason and the push is because Modern Warfare 3 is coming out in a couple months. I've had this game since Christmas of last year and haven't touched it. So I finally took the opportunity to try to at least start this game. And man, I'm playing on normal difficulty, the campaign. I'm one of those, what people would probably consider weirdos, that plays Call of Duty every year for the campaign and not for the multiplayer. But I love the campaigns and the games. Always have since Call of Duty 2. Only one I would really say was questionable that I didn't really care for was probably Call of Duty 3 way back in the day. Regardless, with Modern Warfare 2, 2.5 hours got me halfway through the campaign. So probably within 5 to 6 hours, I'll be finishing up that game as a whole. Now, I probably hopefully only need about 3 more hours max, and I'll be able to give you a review for that one. I will say what I did play in that 2.5 hours was very solid and pretty much what you would expect from a Call of Duty game. Now, the final game in this quick hit of selection of games that I played, Madden NFL 2024, has come out recently over the past 2 weeks. And I also, as part of my Game Pass Ultimate membership, it comes with EA Play as part of that. So with EA Play, they offer you a 10-hour free trial of most of their games. So it includes new releases, by the way. So therefore, Madden 24, I was very interested in playing some football, some digital football. I hadn't done that in a few years now, but I didn't want to fork out the $60, $70 for the new Madden. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to just at least try it out because I wanted to play. My team is the Eagles. Obviously, I live in Philly, so that's my team. And I wanted to actually play with the new roster because I haven't played the Eagles or as the Eagles in a Madden game since the Wentz years. So this is a few years ago is the last time I played. So totally different team now. So I was very excited to jump in there. And I did at least start the franchise with the Eagles and played my one game. And it was a lot of fun. I did end up destroying the Patriots in week 1 of that season. So hopefully that translates to reality here in a couple weeks when the real season really actually kicks off. But regardless, I thought graphically it was amazing. I mean, the character faces, you know who these players are, as well as the controls of control. Like, it just felt different. It felt more real, if that makes sense. Less stiff, more loose and organic than what they had 3 years ago. I'll say that much. So definitely in an hour or two of playing Madden, it was a pretty solid, fun experience. But now, after we've gone through these quick hits, I had a couple of games that I put a little bit more detailed, focused time into. So I want to start next by going into my time with Atomic Heart. Atomic Heart came out back in February of this year, and I was very much looking forward to it when it first came out. It looked like this BioShock spiritual successor, and in a lot of ways, it has been that, and that's one reason why I was really drawn into it. Just the look and style of the graphics and the setting and all these different things kind of drew me to it, and so I did play it back in February when it released on Game Pass, and I liked what I played. But it was still something kind of awkward about it. I enjoyed what I was playing, but something about it just felt different. And that's not a bad thing. It was just not exactly what I thought, but also something I was enjoying. Unfortunately, it came out at a time when I was trying to focus on Hogwarts Legacy, and then Resident Evil 4 came out, and so on and so forth. So over the course of the 6 months since the game has released, I had only played and gone back to it 2 different times, that month of February when it first released, and then 4 months later in June, I did go back to it for a couple hours here or there. Now, over this past 2 week period, I did put another 10 hours into the game, and I gotta tell you, 16 hours total is where I'm at. I'm about halfway through the game at this point based on the chapter list. If you look up the chapter list and which chapter I'm on, I am right there at the halfway point. So more than likely, it's going to end up taking me, I would say, 32 to 35 hours to play this game the rest of the way that I like to enjoy games. I'm not going after any kind of 1,000G or, you know, all that. I'm not doing that. I'm trying to enjoy what I play and get what I can out of it and go for what achievements I want to as I go through. Now, this 10 hours that I played, I would say that a bulk of it was progressing the story. And that story is just really, really interesting. If you don't know anything about Atomic Heart, basically it's set in an alternate timeline where Russia actually was the dominant higher power coming out of World War II. And the game is set in the 50s. And it's, I mean, Russia is the epitome of science and technology and advancement in the world. And they've actually created, through polymers and all kinds of different technological advancements, androids, robotics, the integration of some of that, the start of that within human beings. And there's just a lot of really interesting stuff going on there as far as from the scientific and technological aspect of it. Well, obviously, as is always the case in these scenarios, the machines find a will of their own and they decide to turn on the humans, and things go pretty bad pretty quick. So this whole mountainous kind of area that I have loved to explore so far is basically dotted with different tiny villages where researchers used to live and different research complexes and very involved transit ways of cable cars that are kind of like, it's almost like a monorail. I won't say cable cars. It's really kind of a train monorail type system, and they transport you from location to location. And when I booted up my save file coming from all the way back in June, it was actually pretty rough, I'll be honest with you gamers, because the controls and just the mindset. I feel like whenever you're playing a game and you're consistent with it, you have a certain mindset and understanding of what the game needs from you as a player, if that makes sense. And I was completely clueless when I went back to this game. I remembered where I was at for the most part, exploring this one facility, and the controls were the biggest hurdle for me, is trying to remember the controls. And yeah, I can look at the control format and everything, but man, it was very cumbersome that first couple of hours back into the game world. But once I got the handle back on the controls, oh man, it was just amazing from then on out. And it just kept continuing to get better and better. So as I said, I was in one of those research facilities, the first one that you really go to at the beginning of the game. And there is basically a massive labyrinth of hallways and different research wings of this laboratory, or this facility, I should say. And each one kind of focuses on different aspects of technology and research and development. And there is a central tree in this center room of the whole complex that needs to be reactivated, is what you're trying to do. And there's different specific reasons for it I won't go into. Bottom line is, you need four different switches essentially inputted into this central tree, or the consoles around the central tree, and each wing has one of the switches that you need. So you have to go through each wing, and there's the botany wing, which is about plant-based technology and research. And there's the electrical wing about, you know, just different things with electricity and stuff like that. My favorite wing was the botany wing, because there was some actual, it reminded me very much of some enemies that you see in Half-Life in those games. They looked very much like they were humans that were taken over by these sentient carnivorous plants that were part of they were stemming from the research that the scientists had been doing there. And they basically, things had gone bad, the killer plants had gotten out, and they can almost infect alien style humans or a host. And then the humans, oh man, their faces open up and they look like leaves because it's kind of split in four directions, and they're really fast. I mean, it was cool stuff. All the while, you still have crazy robots running around trying to kill you and preserve the area. So exploring that location, not to mention this massive weed that had grown out of control, and just, there was a really cool puzzle with moving this train car from corridor to corridor. There was just a lot of really cool stuff there. And by the time I was done with that complex, it was ironic. The name of the chapter was Breath of Fresh Air, and it was very on the nose, because you finally get out of the facility and you're out in this massive open area, and it's woods and kind of like this nice little village that you can go through with the researchers who worked there at the laboratory. They lived in this village, and it was interesting to walk through the village and see and go inside most of their houses and different barns and things they had set up around the area. So that was really fun to explore that. Kind of, you had to sneak around different security cameras and robots and different things like that that were in the way all the time, picking up and reading different documents or having audio files to listen to kind of give some substance and context to what the people's lives were like there in that village. So I thoroughly enjoyed that. And then as you get to the train station that's going to take you to the next major open kind of hub world area, there's just all kinds of bodies everywhere, and you got to figure out some puzzles to get the train activated. And then once you take that train, of course, let's just say that it ends with a crash. that puts you out into this open hub world area. And it was once I got here that I thoroughly fell in love with what the game calls training facilities. Now, these training facilities essentially are kind of like multi-level underground facilities that are very much puzzle-based. And you figure out puzzles as you go through, and there are these three different robotic-type devices that when you find them and solve the puzzle that's increasingly harder for each one, there's a gold, silver, and a bronze, and each one obviously is a little bit more tricky of a puzzle to figure out to get to them. They have all kinds of really unique weapon and item schematics and upgrades that you can find. And it's just kind of fun going through and exploring and finding more context and substance to the game world and the area. So I actually did two of those. There are eight in the game. And I did two of those training facilities out in this massive open world area, and they were just a lot of fun. So I really enjoyed the training facilities. My final time, I pretty much ended with a boss fight with the boss is named Hedgie, this massive rolling around robot that you fight within the park. And I just, man, it was awesome because there was an achievement for defeating this boss without ever using and firing a single shot. So I ended up doing that. That was a lot of fun. And then I go into this next new facility in order to find some things that I needed to progress the story further. So that's kind of where I left off. And that 10 hours, I mean, there is a lot more obviously in there in between, but I can't sit here and go over every little detail. But man, it was just an absolute great time I had in the game, learning the upgrade system, really understanding how to use the upgrade system. And I absolutely loved it. I cannot recommend Atomic Heart enough if you like good, fun, kind of semi-open world first-person shooters and BioShock especially. I mean, it's great. So Atomic Heart was one of two of the most I've played of games outside of Final Fantasy 16 since beating it. The next one may surprise you, and that is MLB The Show 23. Gamers, I gotta tell you, I have been absolutely in love with some baseball. Not just real life baseball. The Braves, the Atlanta Braves, they're my favorite team. They always have been. And man, they're having a great season in real life. So when it comes to MLB The Show, I don't know if you're like me, but when your team's doing well in real life, or just in general, when you're staying up to date with all the stats and everything like that, it's kind of an extra push for me to want to play the actual game version of the sport. Same thing happens during basketball season with 2K and football with Madden. I mean, it happens every year, every season for me. So I really wanted to play some baseball over the course of these past 2 weeks. And what I ended up doing is playing a lot more than what I anticipated. And that's a good thing. It's actually become kind of like my go-to, hey, if I only got an hour or two to play, I'm going to play me a game of MLB. And over the course of the last 2 weeks, gamers, I dropped about 22 hours into MLB The Show 23, and that equates to 20 games in my franchise season so far. So that is the 20 plus the only two, believe it or not, that I had played up to the 2 weeks ago when I started this time frame I'm discussing. And I really only played those first two games of the season when the MLB The Show 23 first came out. I hadn't played it since then, and man, I have not been able to stop playing it since I picked it back up a couple weeks ago. Now, over the course of those 20 games, I have had some ups and downs, is the way I'll put it. There's been some games where it's just been extremely fun because I've just been rocking the ball. There's been other games where I just can't get a hit to save my life. There's been a couple of games where what me and Graveyard Gamer refer to as sports game shenanigans. And that's basically if there's all some kind of fishy stuff. Like if the computer, the AI team you're playing against has not scored a run, or in my case, little story for you, in the course of those 20 games, there was one game I was playing, and it was against the San Diego Padres. I had a no-hitter, gamers, a no-hitter going into the seventh inning. I got the first out in the seventh inning. Now, if you know anything about baseball, you know that a no-hitter is extremely hard to do, one of the hardest things to do in all of baseball. So for me, I have never gotten a no-hitter in any game across any generation of gaming that I've ever played a baseball game. So for me, I was extremely excited to get to the seventh inning. I'm like, man, seventh inning, one out, I might actually do this, man. I am literally eight outs away from getting a no-hitter. This is amazing. Next guy comes up, and guess what, gamers? The guy ends up getting a single, laced to right center. And I'm like, here we go. There goes the no-hitter. I was very disappointed, to say the least, but it was a hit. I wasn't too worried about it. Well, bottom line is, they end up rocking my pitcher at that point. It's like all of a sudden the offense for the team woke up, and they essentially put themselves ahead of me by two. So it was 2-0, me winning. Well, now they go up 4-2 in the seventh inning. So now we go to the eighth inning. I finally get out of that seventh inning, and I'm like, man, this is ridiculous. I cannot believe that this has happened to me. So we go to the top of the eighth inning, right? Well, I end up getting two more runs to match them. Awesome. So now we get two runs. The game is tied. They get two more runs in the bottom of the eighth. Are you kidding me? Go to the ninth inning. All right, well, I get a run, and all I got to do at that point, okay, fine. Let me just get these final three outs. I bring in my closer. I got this. Gamers, would you believe? I get the first out, so I'm two outs away from winning the game, game over. The next batter comes up and gets a hit. All right, single, whatever. Let's get a double play and end this. Well, the guy that comes up to bat, the commentators even make a point to say, man, this guy hasn't gotten a hit the whole series against the Braves. He's gone 0-8. Well, next thing you know, next pitch, he rocks a two-run walk-off home run to win the game and beat me. I'm like, are you kidding me? I was absolutely furious, gamers. I was so mad. Not only did I lose the no-hitter in the seventh inning, but I also ended up losing the game. It wasn't enough that I was able to keep pace with the team and say, oh, okay, you got two ahead of me. Boom, I got you right back at two. And then they got two more runs in the bottom of the eighth. Oh, I got you. I got one more run in the ninth. I just got to get you three more outs. No, they end up getting me on a freaking two-run home run walk-off in order on a guy that was 0-8 for the entire series, not a single hit. And he ends up getting a walk-off two-run home run. Oh, I just couldn't believe it. I was so frustrated. But outside of that specific game, there have been some other couple of things here or there that I was just like, man, I'm actually on a three-game losing streak at this point. I was trying to get to a four-game winning streak before now this three-game losing streak. But stupid little things keep happening from game to game that have led me to that three-game losing streak. The first game of those three being the one that I lost a no-hitter in. The other two games, the one was legit. I just couldn't hit worth a crap. And then the other game, it honestly was partly me, partly shenanigans. At the end of the day, though, I am 11-9. I'm third in the National League East. And I am really trying and hoping that I get to a point where I am moving forward in the standings. And actually, I really want to play some National League East rivals because I haven't had a chance to play any of them in a while. So I really want to play the Phillies. I want to play the Marlins, the Mets. All those guys. I've played the Nats, the Nationals. I'm not really worried about playing them right now, but oh man, I really want to play the Phillies. But that was my time in MLB The Show 23, and I've just thoroughly enjoyed the 20 games I played overall so far. Can't wait to keep going through. And I mean, man, it's a marathon for a baseball season, 162 games in the regular season. So I got a ways to go. But ultimately, it should keep me satisfied throughout the course of this next year going into until the next MLB The Show releases in 24. So that was what I was up to this past couple of weeks in my gaming journey. Out of all of that, though, let's find out what my highlight of the week was. Gamers, there was so much to consider this week when thinking about what it was that I was going to designate as my highlight of the week. And I do feel like I have to give first an honorable mention to completing Final Fantasy 16. Believe it or not, that is not my highlight of these past 2 weeks, even though it was pretty amazing to have that epicness completed and kind of signed, sealed, delivered, if you will. For me, the true highlight of the week was finally completing Horizon Forbidden West's Burning Shores expansion. So I know that it's just an expansion, but it still was a sizable one. I spent about 26 hours playing through it and doing everything within the expansion, getting all 18 trophies. And just in general, to be honest, the time that I had with it over this past week was just awesome. I mean, every time I picked it up and played it, there was about three or four different periods of time where I picked it up since its release until now when I finished it. And every time there was just something really specific that stood out to me about my play session. This time, obviously, it was the climax of the whole thing that I had talked about. You know, the last time it was ending in Pangea Park and just the awesomeness around that. And just looking at it as a whole, it was just an amazing experience. And for it to be just, when I say quote unquote, just an expansion, it was just so good. And I absolutely loved it. And just, it was another reminder of why I love the Horizon series so much, between the gameplay and the story and the lore, the character of Aloy. And man, it got me hyped up again for what we can expect, hopefully sooner than later, when it comes to Horizon 3. Now, I know we're still probably a couple of years off, but that's okay. This was amazing. So it clearly won my highlight of the week. Now, let's go open up a chest of buried treasure gaming tips I have for you in Horizon Forbidden West. As I stated, I was actually pretty excited that I got all 18 trophies that were available in the Burning Shores expansion. But there was one that I really thought was going to give me some trouble, and it was a little intimidated until I got into it and kind of figured out the best strategy for it. So I wanted to give you my strategy on how I got the trophy. Hopefully, maybe it'll save you some time if you were looking to do the same. So there is a trophy for getting 5 kills with the Spectre Gauntlet, which is a new weapon you get in the game, while using the glider. So if you played Horizon Forbidden West already, you'll know what I'm talking about with the glider. When you jump out off of a cliff, or when there's a massive distance between you and the ground, you can press and hold the square button, and Aloy will automatically equip basically this glider where you can glide down and not have to worry about breaking every bone in Aloy's body as she hits the ground. So while using that glider, you have to get 5 kills with the Spectre Gauntlet. Now, the Spectre Gauntlet has 2 modes. It has a rapid fire, kind of like a machine gun type mode to it. And it also has a very specific laser focus. You have to it's kind of like a charged shot is what it is. So you don't want to use that one here. You obviously want to use the more rapid fire option. And I would recommend what you want to do is you want to make sure you play enough into Burning Shores to the point where you can override and then therefore ride on the back of a water wing. The water wing is the newest overridable machine in the Horizon universe, and it's the one that you see in the trailers. You can actually dive underwater and whatnot. An awesome, awesome machine, regardless of whether you're diving or flying. I loved the water wing. But the reason why I say you want to have the water wing is because you're always going to be able to ultimately be in control of that height, that distance in the air that you're going to need to create in order to jump off of the water wing and then use that glider. So next, after you get the water wing, you're flying around, you're going to have to find what I would consider some sting spawn. And basically, sting spawn are a new machine type that you can fight as enemies. They're basically like mosquitoes or robotic versions of mosquitoes, but they're bigger than a real mosquito now. But the bile gut is the massive frog machine that is in this expansion. And they basically have all kinds of sting spawn around them. And they also harbor eggs and things like that of the sting spawn. So if you find a bio guts location where it shows on the map, hey, this is a bio guts site. If you played the original game, you know that that signifies you can go there, you can find that specific machine. So anywhere there's a bio gut, there's going to be sting spawn, and typically they're in clusters. So you have plenty to choose from, and you only need to shoot and kill 5. Now, it's not as easy as it sounds because you still got to kind of play with it a little bit, but you got to make sure that all of them are killed by the Spectre Gauntlet. So my suggestion, find a bio gut site on the map, go to it, and then use your water wing to get your distance into the sky. And you can press and hold square to kind of lunge jump off of the water wing. And then immediately press and hold square to pull out the glider. And then once you do that, and after you have also purchased and gained the ability to use the Spectre Gauntlet, you actually have to purchase that ability with skill points. Then you'll be able to actually shoot while you're gliding and using the glider. And you want to have the Spectre Gauntlet, I would recommend, equipped before you start trying to jump and glide. And it just takes it. You want to maximize every second in the air as possible. So what happens is when you jump off the water wing, you press and hold L2 to slow down time and target go in the direction at least of the sting spawn. And just basically take them out as much as you can, as quickly as you can. And when you get to 5, bloop, the trophy will pop for you. So hopefully that gives you some insight and some help and saves you some time. Now, before we go to Captain's Decree, I have a unique segment that I have not actually done in quite a while, and you'll see why here in just 1 second. Over the course of my show, I have done a few segments in the past that started with a little segment called The Road to 500. And what that was I was gaining ground on reaching 500 overall trophies in my PlayStation journey. Now, back then, it didn't seem like a whole lot. Even today, it doesn't seem like all that much. But I didn't play PlayStation as much back then as I did the Xbox. So it was a big deal for me. So I was like, man, this would be a cool segment. And then it got to be not just about the road to 500, but then it was the road to 1,000. And so I thought about it and I'm like, you know what? Every 500 trophies, I'm going to do a road to whatever that next 500th number is. But the way I do it is once I get within 100 trophies, that's when I let you listeners know. And then week to week, I update you on my Captain's Quarters episodes, where I'm at, how close I am to getting to that 1,500, and ultimately when I do cross that finish line of 1,500 or more trophies. So currently where I'm at right now, I, with everything that I played over the last couple of weeks and before I went to recording, I had 1,406 trophies. So 1,406 trophies. I need another 94 in order to hit 1,500. So stick with me. Check back week to week. See how much I progress or don't progress. And just in general, I'm curious to see how long it takes me to get those next 95 and what game it'll be that crosses that $1,500 mark for me. So next up, the final segment of the episode, let's check out this week's Captain's Decree. Gamers, as I close out the episode this week, I just want to briefly touch on the three different accessories that PlayStation kind of showcased and highlighted around this week of Gamescom, and kind of give my decree of what my opinion is and whether I feel like any or all three of these devices are even necessary. So the first up, I got to talk about the PlayStation Portal. By the time I've gone to recording, we have gotten the release date of this device, and that is November 15th. So if you're just now listening to this episode as it comes out and you hadn't seen that yet, it did just break before I went to recording. So we have a November 15th release date for the PlayStation Portal, and we had gotten the price for it already at the week of Gamescom, which was $200. Now, if you don't know what PlayStation Portal is, basically it is their Wi-Fi remote play device. It is an 8-inch LCD screen, 1080p, so it's not in 4K, and it essentially is the DualSense controller that you use for a PS5, all the features. You got your haptic feedback, your adaptive triggers, and they're essentially, you take the DualSense controller, split it in half, and glue it onto the each respective side of an 8-inch tablet screen, and that's what this thing is. Now, the fact that it actually still has the functionality of the DualSense, I think, is really great. But the fact that it requires you to be on a Wi-Fi network in order to use it and to stream its games, that is the part that I kind of have issue with. It's like, man, you have to be on a good, reliable Wi-Fi network, one. So finding that and being on a network that is stable and is not going to give you just insane lag the whole time you're trying to play, that is a big deal breaker for me. On top of that, you're only streaming the games, so you're never going to be able to actually have those games optionable outside of the Wi-Fi network. So it'd be awesome if you still had the option to download them to an internal space of storage, or even if there were tiny discs or something that Sony could put out there, cartridges, whatever, to be a means of physical access to the games without requiring a Wi-Fi network. I get the reason why they're wanting to get into the portable remote play space. Obviously, their direct competitor in Xbox, they have xCloud, and you essentially just pull out your phone and hook up to the Game Pass app, and you can play your games via streaming that way. So I know Sony has remote play already, but I guess they felt like they wanted to do a dedicated portable device without actually putting in the complete funding and money into it to do like a PS Vita 2 or a PSP rendition for this current technology and day and age. So I'm still interested in it. I still do think I'll probably be suckered into getting it because I'm just a glutton for the newer tech like this. But we'll see what happens. But November 15th, $200. We also had shown off, we had already seen before Gamescom, when they first showed off the PlayStation Portal, the little earbuds for PlayStation. And that is what we got a name for this time. Those are PlayStation Explore, is the name of those earbuds. So interesting name. But either way, they're called PlayStation Explore. And they will be out. I don't have a release date for those yet either. I probably will pass on those. I will say it's very tempting for me because, man, the fact that you can actually link up with your PlayStation Portal, that is makes it easy, I'll put it that way, because the way they're talking right now, there's no Bluetooth for PlayStation Portal, which is another deal breaker or downgrade for me as far as the device is concerned. So you can't just get any Bluetooth headset and connect to it. And you have to have this PlayStation Link app that is the only way to connect specific PlayStation branded or proprietary products. Therefore, you know, you look right there at the PlayStation Explore earbuds. And I just don't know if I want to pay almost $200 for earbuds plus the PlayStation Portal. So we're talking almost $500 after tax when that's what I pay almost for a PS5. So why would I spend that much money to remote play on a hopefully stable Wi-Fi network with these earbuds? It's a little frustrating for me and confusing. But for me, the best thing that they announced at Gamescom around these new devices that they're coming out with was the Pulse Elite headset. So I have talked about it for years, as long as I've had the Pulse 3D headset for the PlayStation 5. It's all the only headset I use for the PS5 all these years, since the PS5's launch, almost 3 years ago now. Well, they're now coming up with a higher-end headset later this fall. Don't have a release date or anything on that either, but regardless, I will absolutely be buying that headset because I am all about the Pulse 3D headset, and if you're telling me this is an upgrade on that quality, whew, I am there. So it looks pretty much the same as the Pulse 3D headset, little aesthetics different. It does have a pull-out microphone that you can utilize with it. And obviously, of course, from a technological standpoint, you know, the sound and different, you know, features that it has are supposed to be a one-up on the Pulse 3D headset. So this is kind of like a mid-range headset for Sony, I would say. I don't think it's really a high-end headset, but they're getting closer to that level. The Pulse 3D, I would say, was a flat mid-range, and then you go into a step up now with the Pulse Elite headset. So I can't wait for that. Definitely would love to be hearing the wind whoosh through my ears on the Pulse Elite headset. So hopefully it releases around Spider-Man 2, so as I'm web-swinging around New York City, I can experience that. But we'll see what happens. But out of these three devices, are they all necessary or any of them necessary? Personally, I would say I don't think any of them are necessary, to be 100% honest with you. I do understand wanting to upgrade your technology and things like that when it comes to the headset. So I can kind of see that one. But as far as having the earbuds, but only limiting the Play Link as an option, like a middleman, if you will, to have as a requirement, that I'm not really down with. And then for the PlayStation Portal, to only have it be a remote play access point and requiring Wi-Fi and streaming only, there's just a lot of different little negatives where it's like, I don't know, Sony, why are we doing this? So in my opinion, are they cool in concept, and do they maybe expand the options for us as gamers? Maybe, but at the end of the day, I really don't feel like any of them are necessary. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com. You can also search for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks, as well as find me on social media on Instagram and Threads at Lost at Sea Gaming, as well as on X at Lost at Sea, GAMIN, the number one. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.